It's nearly noon and time for the KMXT Midday News. Thank you for listening to KMXT on 100.1 FM. We are your public radio station, broadcasting from beautiful downtown Kodiak, Alaska, where it's 46 degrees right now. We're looking for scattered showers today, rain likely tonight, mainly before 7 p.m. Calm winds will turn to the west and go to 5 miles per hour tonight. Just a 40% chance of rain for tomorrow. Cloudy skies tomorrow with a high near 51. Coming up on the Midday News, another case of COVID at a Kodiak school. A report on the Kodiak Coast Guard's town hall meeting last night. Details on how the CARES Act fisheries assistance funding will be divvied up. And tomorrow is the big debate between Dr. Al Gross and Dan Sullivan. And remember, you have just 2 more hours to register for Run the Rock. All that and more after national headlines.
Live from NPR News, I'm Lakshmi Singh. A major hurricane's bearing down on Louisiana for the second time in under 6 weeks. Hurricane Delta is now the 10th named storm to strike the continental U.S. this year. That's never happened before. At last check, Delta was a Category 2 with top sustained winds of 105 miles per hour. Governor John Bel Edwards is asking people to pray for his state, including for those living around Lake Charles, where there are still huge piles of debris from the destruction Hurricane Laura caused in late August. Large numbers of evacuees from that storm are still living in hotels or with family or friends because their homes are uninhabitable.
As of this morning, 9,537 Louisianans were being sheltered. 6,300 of those were because of Hurricane Laura. And then there's an additional 2,000 from Laura that are in Texas. More than 800 evacuees are because of Hurricane Delta.
Edwards says local shelters and a massive one in central Louisiana are set up to keep families safely distanced from each other to help guard against coronavirus. Speaking of, a big question mark still looms over coronavirus safeguards at the White House. President Trump, who's being treated for COVID-19, is itching to get back out on the campaign trail. He has repeatedly said he might hold a rally this weekend, and he has repeatedly drawn backlash from critics who say Trump might still be shedding virus. But Trump's doctor says it's been 10 days since Trump tested positive for coronavirus, and so he should be able to make a safe return to public engagements as soon as this weekend, perhaps. NPR's Selena Simmons-Duffin has more.
CDC guidelines say when it comes to mild cases, you're likely no longer infectious 10 days after you first experienced symptoms, but that period is 20 days for people who had more severe illness. There isn't a lot of public information about the president's illness, including when his symptoms began or how seriously sick he was, so public health experts worry that he's ending his isolation too early and could be putting others at risk. Selena Simmons-Duffin, NPR News.
The federal government's ordering the state of Nevada to reverse a decision to suspend the use of new fast coronavirus tests in nursing homes. More from NPR's Rob Stein.
Nevada health officials ordered nursing homes to suspend the use of the new rapid coronavirus tests because of concerns about their accuracy. Federal health officials acknowledge the test can produce results that are falsely positive, but argue any problems caused by false positives are outweighed by the need to protect nursing home residents and warn Nevada's action violates federal law. Many public health experts are concerned the federal government is distributing millions of the new fast tests for the coronavirus before it's clear how best to use them. Rob Stein, NPR News.
This is NPR.
Yesterday morning, Kodiak Island Borough School District Administration was notified that a person at North Star Elementary had tested positive for COVID-19. As per district protocols, all students or staff who had been in close contact with a positive case will be notified of a 14-day quarantine. The school district is continuing to work together to maintain the health and safety of their students and staff, and they're currently employing the following steps as per their COVID response plan. All students and staff who are considered close contacts will remain at home for a 14-day quarantine period. They will be working with families to implement virtual learning during that time. Following the 14-day period, staff and students will return to school. North Star Elementary will be closed to all students and staff for a period of 24 hours to undergo deep cleaning. The school will reopen on Thursday, October 15th, 2020, due to the previously scheduled KIBSD in-service. They're working closely with the Kodiak Public Health Nurse Bonnie Weed, who is engaged in every facet of their response plan. The school district continues to encourage all parents to take their students' temperature and monitor students closely for any sign of potential illness. The number of coronavirus cases in Kodiak has climbed to 94 as of today. The Kodiak Area Emergency Services Organization say there are currently 18 active cases. One new COVID-19 infection was reported this morning. Health officials say this person is a close contact of a previously reported case. Close contacts of this latest case have been identified and are in isolation. The COVID-19 outbreak at the Kodiak Coast Guard base has been contained through aggressive contact tracing. That was the message from commanders at yesterday's virtual town hall meeting for Coast Guard service members and their families, despite an outbreak of more than a dozen cases, with more expected.
Well, good afternoon and welcome to the Team Kodiak Town Hall live stream event.
That's Captain Edward Hernays, the base commander. He conceded it's been tough to give service members and their families accurate updates.
At this point in time, there's so much information going around between commands and through our clinic and through our contact tracing group that we're not going to get every single detail right all the time. So you are part of this process, you are part of this team. We depend on you to bring those to our attention so that we can resolve them if there are questions or concerns.
Hernays and other officers began by answering questions that had been submitted in advance. Many had to do with the restrictions that went into place after the base raised its risk level from amber to red status. Many asked when recreational and daycare facilities would reopen. Others wanted to know why Coast Guard members and their families have been subjected to restrictions that are much harsher than the community of Kodiak. Captain Hernays said he wanted everyone to understand that they're in a public health emergency and that the base is the source of that emergency. Members were told the outbreak started with about 4 workers and quickly spread to other units. Last week, hundreds were tested for COVID-19. About half of those results are back, with only one positive test result. Alaska fisheries workers can finally see how they might benefit from a $50 million aid package from the federal government. The Alaska Department of Fish and Game released the Section 12005 CARES Act Fisheries Assistance Draft Spend Plan for public comment on Monday. It determines how $50 million will be distributed to struggling fisheries around the state of Alaska. It not only explains how the money will be divvied up, it also details who will be eligible. The current version was changed drastically, according to Alaska State House Representative Louise Stutes.
I think that it would have been a lot more controversial had the formula not been changed to increase the formula for the sport guys.
According to Stutes, the original breakdown would have only allotted sports fisheries and guides 5% of the funding, but now their slice of the assistance package has been up to 32%. She says that after this adjustment, the distribution of funds is, quote, fair and equitable, unquote. Sport fishing, commercial harvesting, and seafood processing each have a 32% cut of the total. Aquaculture will receive 1%, and the final 3% will go to subsistence fishing. The plan will be available for public comment until 6 p.m. October 19th and can be viewed at the Alaska Department of Fish and Game website. Comments can be emailed to them at dfg.com.caresact@alaska.gov. The U.S. Secretary of Commerce announced the fisheries relief money on May 7th to all coastal states and territories. Of the $300 million set aside for the nation, Alaska will receive $50 million. 100% of those funds will go as direct payments to partially cover losses incurred by the present economic slump. The first debate in the Alaska State Senate or the Alaska Senate race began between Al Gross and Dan Sullivan will be held tomorrow evening at 5 p.m. and hosted by the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce. As is tradition for the Kodiak debate, the topics will be limited strictly to fisheries issues. The debate will be hosted by veteran broadcast journalist Rhonda McBride and broadcast live over the Comfish and Kodiak Chamber of Commerce websites, as well as their YouTube and Facebook pages. And, of course, you can also listen to it right here on KMXT on 100.1 FM, the station to which you are currently listening. The fisheries debate has been held by the Kodiak Chamber of Commerce since 1999 and is the staple of the Alaska Politics Campaign Trail. Again, that's 5 p.m. tomorrow night, right here on KMXT. Alaska voters will decide next month whether to raise production taxes at Alaska's largest oil fields. Ballot Measure 1 is an initiative that its supporters say would fix Alaska's tax law and fill the state's gaping budget gap. But those who opposed the measure argue it would lead to less investment in Alaska and jeopardize the state's economy. In short, the two-page ballot measure is contentious. Alaska Public Media's Tegan Hanlon and Casey Grove talked recently about the ballot measure and, if it's approved, how it could impact Alaska.
I guess let's first just step back a minute. You might also hear Ballot Measure 1 referred to as the Fair Share Act. And if it's approved by voters, it would amend some of Alaska's oil tax law, also known as Senate Bill 21. SB 21 is a controversial piece of legislation that state lawmakers passed back in 2013. At the time, the governor then, Sean Parnell, said SB 21 would make Alaska more competitive with other oil-producing areas.
Yes, controversial oil tax measures of the past, SB 21 being one of them. Okay, so I've got that. How would this initiative change the current law, SB 21?
Right. So Ballot Measure 1, if approved, would apply to Alaska's three largest North Slope oil fields. And right now, those fields are Prudhoe Bay, Kuparuk, and Alpine. And the main producers there are ConocoPhillips, Hillcorp, and Exxon. So anyway, under the ballot measure, those companies producing oil at those larger fields would, one, pay more production taxes, and two, the documents they submit to the state to calculate those production taxes would be public record. Right now, those documents are confidential. And there's a couple other parts of the ballot measure, too. Like, one of the reasons taxes would be higher is because the ballot measure would eliminate the per-barrel tax credits for those fields. Also, those bigger fields would be, well, it's called ring-fenced. That basically means oil companies could no longer reduce their taxes on those larger fields by subtracting deductions earned at the smaller fields. Those supporting the measure say that will close a loophole in the current law, but those opposed say it eliminates any incentive for companies to expand into an area that's not yet producing oil.
Who are the supporters and who's the opposition to this?
So the group backing the initiative is called Vote Yes for Alaska's Fair Share. It's chaired by an Anchorage attorney named Robin Brenna. And then on the other side is a group called One Alaska Vote No on One. And that group is chaired by Chantal Walsh, and she's a former director of the state's Division of Oil and Gas under Governor Bill Walker. Also, to note, you've probably heard a lot of commercials so far from One Alaska, and that's because it has raised a lot of money to fight the ballot measure, more than $18 million, actually. Its major contributors are Conoco, Exxon, Hillcorp, and BP. And then the Vote Yes group has raised quite a bit less so far, about $1.5 million.
Okay, let's go back to the whole the companies pay more in production taxes part of this. So how much more are we talking?
That's a good question. There's a few different numbers getting thrown around, and it depends on how much oil is getting produced and what oil prices are. So the State Department of Revenue actually recently did this analysis for next fiscal year, and it says if production stays the same, then total production taxes paid at roughly the current per barrel price of oil, I realize that's a lot of caveats, but basically, if we take this year and move it into next year, the total amount of production taxes paid would roughly triple. So for $45 per barrel oil prices, which is a little higher than right now, it'd go from nearly $200 million under current law to just over $560 million in total production taxes under ballot measure one. Supporters of the initiative say that money would help fill Alaska's expected very large budget deficit and help pay for government services, but the opposition counters that it will hardly make a dent in the budget hole if it is, as expected, more than $2 billion. And they also say there's just too many negative impacts.
Yeah, I mean, well, triple the oil tax revenue sounds great, but what are the impacts expected to be to taxing the oil companies more?
Right. That's also a good question. And there's not a clear answer, I'd say, at this point. You know, you have One Alaska on one side saying there's no question there will be less investment and less drilling in Alaska. They say there's no industry in the state that could sustain such a significant tax increase and not change their business behavior. But then on the other side, you have Vote Yes for Alaska's Fair Share, and they say the state needs to stop subsidizing the oil industry and the companies will still make money in Alaska. And then for a more third-party perspective, I actually just got off the phone with Musin Ghatabi, who's an economist at the University of Alaska Anchorage. And he says there's just way too many unknowns to tell right now specifically to what degree ballot measure one would impact oil production. Here's Ghatabi.
And we don't know the extent to which the change in the tax regime will make Alaska potentially less attractive than other places.
While there's a lot of unknowns, Ghatabi says he knows two things for sure about ballot measure one. The state will make more money, and that money will come from oil companies' profits.
Voting in Juneau's first by-mail local election ended on Tuesday, but results aren't expected until later today. Juneau officials arrived in Anchorage yesterday. Thousands of ballots have already arrived at the Anchorage Vote Center, where results processing will take place. KTOO's Adeline Baxter is in Anchorage and will cover the process. She caught up with Juneau City Clerk at the airport yesterday.
City Clerk Beth McEwen arrived in Anchorage with more than 1,000 ballots in tow. Along with Administrative Assistant Lacey Davis, she caught the afternoon flight out of Juneau. They checked two large blue cases of ballots. I met up with them in the car rental lobby.
How was the flight?
It was perfect. I even got a few minutes of nap.
That's probably kind of rare in the last 2 weeks, I'm guessing.
Sleep of all kinds has been very rare in the last few weeks.
Voting in Juneau's local election began last month, but the work has been going on since May. On McEwen's recommendation, Juneau decided to allow this year's local election to take place by mail. The clerk's office set about completely re-envisioning how to run an election safely during a pandemic. More than 27,000 ballots were mailed out to registered voters in September. Now, it's time to process the results. Ballot sorting is already going on at the Anchorage Vote Center.
So where are you headed now?
We're going to load up the rental car with the ballot boxes, and then we're going to head to the Anchorage Election Center.
What does today entail? Are you pretty much going to be done for the day after you deliver things, or is there still more work to be done?
We're going to check in with the Anchorage Election Center, see where they're at in the processing, and make sure the ballots are secure, locked up into the secure area, and then have a game plan for starting first thing in the morning.
Juneau's ballots have never been processed outside the city before. The Anchorage Vote Center is large enough to have space for social distancing, and it has equipment specially designed to process ballot envelopes and verify voter signatures.
So pretty much all of their equipment we don't have available because it is different. They have an envelope sorter. It's got unique barcode that every voter has. It'll take a picture of that barcode along with a picture of their signature, and then that'll go on to another computer system that actually has pictures of signatures from the State Division of Elections, and we'll be comparing those side by side. Humans will be doing the comparison. It's not computer comparison.
McEwen says the city does plan to buy some of the equipment Anchorage has, like ballot scanners. The money has already been set aside for that. But there wasn't enough time to buy them and set them up before the election.
Once they're scanned, then they're what's called adjudicated. If there's any overvotes or undervotes or any of that anomalies on the ballot, then that's my part of the process. I'll be reviewing each one of those ballots for any anomalies.
McEwen expects to officially certify the election October 20th. That's when voters will know the final outcome of three assembly races and two ballot propositions. The new assembly members will be sworn in October 26. In Anchorage, I'm Adeline Baxter.
NPR News es presentada a usted en parte por la Providence Kodiak Island Centro de Asesoramiento. Para una cita o más información, por favor, llama al 907-481-2400.
The Midday Report on KMXT is brought to you in part by Ardinger's Fine Furnishings, where you'll find the Simmons Dual Comfort Mattress, allowing you to customize your sleep experience. Also featuring massage and zero-gravity chairs from the Human Touch Company and sofas and love seats by Stanton. 486-5554.
This is Alaska Fish Radio. I'm Lainey Welch. Shares of more fish are now in the hands of more young Alaskans. More on the local fish fund after this.
An AMC-trained fisherman is more likely to survive an emergency at sea. Learn more at amc.org.
8 more young Alaskans have joined the ranks of professional fishermen in Cordova, Haines, Homer, Ketchikan, and Sitka. It's thanks to a local fish fund that enabled them to buy shares of halibut and black cod. Shares of halibut, for example, can run from $40 to $55 a pound.
Oh, I'm super excited that it worked out this way. We were able to move the $1.5 million that was provided to us to invest in new entrants.
Linda Benkin is director of the Alaska Longline Fishermen's Association and a founding board member of the local fish fund.
We've just seen a drop in new young entrants getting into the fisheries. And we did a bunch of research to understand what was driving that. It's the cost, it's the risks, and started working on ideas of how to address that.
Over a decade, a mix of experts designed loans that use a flexible revenue participation approach where repayments are based on fish landings.
The loan is secured only by the quota share they're purchasing, and their payments fluctuate as the prices of fish or the quota fluctuate.
Fishermen also are given a small break in their loan interest if they participate in local conservation projects, such as electronic monitoring, logging bycatch to avoid hotspots, or networking to keep whales away from fishing gear. Dustin Solberg is with the Nature Conservancy in Cordova.
Some of the partners we're working with are coming specifically from that impact investing sector that's trying to attain conservation goals through innovative lending.
Fund managers now will take a year to assess how well the local fish fund program is working out. Ultimately, the fund aims to empower new generations of ocean stewards to regain access to and safeguard Alaska's fisheries. Find links at alaskafishradio.com. Fish Radio is also brought to you by OBI Seafoods. In Kodiak, I'm Lainey Welch.
Fish Radio is supported in part by Joy Crafts, specializing in marine safety equipment. U.S. Coast Guard approved AMC instruction for commercial fishing vessel safety procedures and drills, serving Kodiak for over 25 years. 486-6293 at 445 Shahafka Circle.
This is the Island Messenger, a look at personal messages, the weather, and community announcements.
KMXT's Island Messenger, supported in part by the Kodiak Daily Mirror, your hometown newspaper since 1940. Now online at www.kodiakdailymirror.com.
Welcome to your Island Messenger for Friday. It is the 9th day of October, the year 2020. The sun rose today at 8:31. It will set again at 7:23 p.m., giving us 10 hours and 47 minutes of glorious daylight. That is a loss of 4 minutes and 55 seconds compared to yesterday. Currently a fairly pleasant 46 degrees outside. We're looking for scattered showers for today and tomorrow. Cloudy skies with highs in the low 50s and low winds. But on Sunday and on Columbus Day, we're calling for partly sunny skies with highs in about 50 for both days and light winds. Looking at our local district tides, here on the east side, we have a low tide coming up at 12:46 p.m. That will be a 4.2-foot tide. followed by a high tide at 7:05 this evening of 7.6 feet. Your low tide for the middle of the night will be at 2:23 a.m. of 1.7 feet, and your high tide for tomorrow morning on the east side will be at 9:31 a.m. of 5.6 foot tide. Over on the west side, and these are Uganic Pass tides, you have a low tide coming up at 1:43 p.m. That will be a 6.7 foot tide, followed by a high tide at 7:27 p.m. of 11.7 feet. Your low tide for the middle of the night will be at 2:46 a.m. of 3.6 feet, and your high tide for tomorrow morning on the west side will be at 9:49 a.m. of 10.3 feet. Mariners, here is your synopsis for the North Gulf Coast, including Kodiak Island waters and Cook Inlet. A front will extend across the northern Gulf and form a 984 millibar low 25 nautical miles northeast of Kodiak City. This low will remain nearly stationary while dissipating Saturday morning. A series of compact lows will develop over the eastern Gulf and move into the northern Gulf Friday afternoon through Saturday afternoon before dissipating by Sunday morning. Your resulting marine weather: Marmot Island to Sitkanak, Kodiak offshore east side, small craft advisory today and Saturday. West wind to 15 knots right now and seas to 8 feet. For tomorrow, look for west wind to 25 knots, seas building to 9 feet. Over in the Shelikof on Kodiak's west side offshore, northwest wind to 15 knots right now, will become variable 10 this afternoon. For tomorrow, look for west winds to 20 knots and seas to 4 feet. Inside waters, Chiniak and Marmot Bays. For Chiniak Bay, variable less than 10 right now and seas to 2 feet. For tomorrow, look for southwest winds to 10 knots, turning to the west, going to 15 knots tomorrow afternoon, seas to 3 feet. In Marmot Bay, west wind to 10 knots right now, become variable less than 10 knots this afternoon, and west winds to 20 knots tomorrow and seas to 3 feet in Marmot Bay. Well, don't forget, Run the Rock is tomorrow, and you can register for it until 2 o'clock today, either online or here at the station. And you can pick up your packet until 6 o'clock today. The Kodiak Arts Council is pleased to announce auditions for the community theater production Letters Aloud, Love Me or Leave Me, a reader's theater work celebrating the written word and highlighting historical letters of love, longing, and redemption. This is a great opportunity for actors who enjoy voice work and seek the challenge of conveying a range of emotion through voice and stationary movement. Auditions will be held by private appointment at the Gerald C. Wilson Auditorium over several days next week, starting Monday and going from 4:30 to 7 p.m. each evening. Director Jesse Marlowe is looking to cast 4 to 6 adult actors. Performance dates are November 20th to 22nd, 2020. For more information, call the Arts Council at 486-5291 or 942-5840, or go to their website at www.kodiakarts.org.
Listen for the Island Messenger here on Public Radio KMXT 2 times a day, Monday through Friday at 9 a.m. and during the midday report at 12:20. If you have a community announcement or personal message, including lost and found items or pets, you can call KMXT at 486-3181, fax us at 486-2733, or email psa@kmxt.org.